Welcome to In the Hive. I'm Tim Pierce.
And I'm Roger McDonough.
And today we're looking into a piece of a national conversation about defunding the police.
Yeah, so you've probably heard a lot about this over the past week, and maybe you're aware that defunding is shorthand for something a little more complicated. And the concept behind the movement is that police budgets should be reallocated because a law enforcement response isn't the right approach for every situation. And because, well, honestly, because of videos like the one that shows the death of George Floyd, or the killing of other people of color at the hands of police.
Exactly. So we've had conversations with police over the years, and we frequently hear them saying things like, look, we're not social workers, or we have a lane in the road and that lane is criminal issues, or we don't want to be the Swiss Army knife of all of society's problems.
Right. So flash forward to 2020, huge protests across the country because of the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis. The defund the police movement is picking up steam. And if you've been paying attention to the news at all, you know that defund means, hey, why not take a chunk, even a sizable chunk, of the money that we spend on the police? Why not take that and, say, spend it on actual social workers or other forms of first responders?
And one of the rationales here is that by some estimates, as many as 50% of encounters with police that turn deadly are the result of someone going through a mental health crisis. That's according to a study in the American Journal of Preventive Medicine.
Right. And so meeting someone experiencing a mental health crisis with law enforcement can result in a tragedy. There's also the fact that data shows a disproportionate use of force against Black people by police. And there have been other longstanding calls for changes to policing, calls for reform, for example.
Right. And that's changes to policies or laws governing policing.
Calls to abolish the police.
And basically remake from scratch what our concept of public safety actually means.
Yeah, but defunding the police has gained steam in many places around the country. It's something that a lot of activists and residents are demanding from their local governments. Here in Salt Lake City, various activist organizations have been asking for a $30 million cut to the police's budget. And it's what a lot of people at Tuesday's meeting of the Salt Lake City Council were saying as well.
Hi. I am a resident of Salt Lake City, and I support defunding the police. Not enough has been done yet, as you can tell by the continuous protests that have been happening every single night. And I'd like to see those resources go to homelessness and mental health outreach. And a lot of other communities are starting to make this move, and I'd like Salt Lake City to be a part of that.
As an African-American woman, I just feel like this isn't enough to fix the issue that's currently going on in Salt Lake City. Kudos to starting the diversity board or the equity board, but as someone who's on a diversity board within the state, I don't really see how that's going to fix the issue. I hope, again, that when you guys make decisions like this, it's just not, I mean, no offense to the council, but you guys aren't really, you know, no one looks like me on the council. So I hope that when there are decisions like this being made to make Salt Lake City more equitable, I do hope that there are brown and Black folks at the table.
I just want to address with the council that I think that you're missing a huge opportunity right now to dismantle and rebuild a safer community in Salt Lake. Response that these things take time feels like paternalism to me, and that you don't trust the communities to tell you what it is that they need.
We do not provide enough funding to these organizations and these nonprofits that are doing all this work to help the community. So the police force have less problems. We don't give enough money to these communities' efforts and groups, to the POC community who needs this. And they need it because it has been proven that if you help your community and you give funding to the community, then you are able to help lower crime. For example, opioid addiction is very high in Utah. Homeless people are affected by this as well, and that is due to them becoming homeless is the opioid addiction. And the only way to help this problem is to give them more funding.
I would love to see the city redefine our public safety as a whole and how that relates to policing in Salt Lake City. I've been researching and trying to just learn about both sides of the issue. And on Nextdoor, I read a lot of police officers expressing concern about being spread really thin, especially amidst this conversation on defunding, but I would like to still see a minimizing of the department and hopefully replace a lot of those calls coming in by concerned citizens with medical responders, crisis intervention members, and mental health responders rather than police officers.
Hi there. The reason it seems the police are being stretched thin is because they're being sent in to deal with problems they are absolutely not qualified to handle instead of just responding to violent crime. Defunding the police means reallocating funds into social workers, uplifting communities of underprivileged BIPOC children by investing in education, investing in public transportation, investing in social programs that address the homelessness and drug addiction problem. If we have qualified people working on these social issues, the police won't have to worry about being stretched thin. If all you have is a hammer, everything will start to look like a nail. And right now, the police are being used as the be-all, end-all tool to address every social problem. They are the problem. This isn't as simple as a few bad apples. The bloated and irresponsible police system is actively creating and defending bad apples. There's no accountability. Thank you.
So those were a few of the calls the council heard on Tuesday. The council didn't, in the end, vote for a massive cut to the police budget. Instead, they set aside $2.8 million that was slated to go to the police. The council says it will also form a city commission on racial equity and policing. That commission will help guide what the police will look like in the future. There's also some additional money for social workers who work inside of the police department. To hear more about how the council decided to do what it did, I spoke with Council Chair Chris Warden. Here's some of our conversation about police funding and public safety inequities.
I think the next step is this commission that the mayor and the council are going to form on racial equity and policing. And what we really want from this commission is some recommendations from leading experts in our community, from Black and Brown voices, that are telling the city what concrete steps can we take to make changes to our ordinances, to our internal policies, what executive orders can we issue, and where can we reprioritize money to rebuild a police department that is based in equity and try to dismantle some of the systemic racial injustices that are inherent in the system.
But do you think those who are subjected to the de-escalation training, can you really train your way out of this?
So the short answer is no, we cannot just train our way out of this problem. It's too deeply rooted. It's too systemic. We know that training alone is not going to bring about the kind of change that we want to see. But we can't say that there isn't going to be any training that is going to be part of it. So we sort of have to be prepared for both of those scenarios as best we can and realize that we're going into a new territory. All cities that are looking at these major reforms are still trying to imagine and understand the implications of what this new future is going to look like. And so that's really exciting, but as policymakers, we have to do our best to try to account for all of those different potential outcomes, and that's what we've tried to do with this budget. I'll also point out that even though the budget is significantly less than what a lot of the commenters demanded, we've said multiple times that this budget is just the beginning. This is not. We're going to have a review in 6 months once this commission has been formed. And I think that people need to understand that if we were to have just done a sort of a slash of $30 million right off the top, we could potentially lose a lot of the programs that Salt Lake City has already implemented that are more community-based programs that seek to try to resolve issues without increasing violence against people in the community. So we don't want to throw everything out and we don't want to have any unintended consequences.
Could you expound on that a little bit? How would cutting the police budget in any way affect those other programs?
Well, we have our Citizens Academy, we have our Community Intelligence Unit, we have our Explorer program, And all of those programs are citizen-based programs, which try to get more citizen input into the department, which try to train citizens on how to prevent crime in their own community, sort of empower them to have more of a community approach to crime. And that we use those to try to attract young people, and specifically people from diverse communities, into looking at a career in law enforcement. And all of those are goals of the defund police movement, that we want to empower communities to not always go right to call the police when there's some crisis that's in the community. That a lot of the things that we call the police out to do aren't best handled by police, and that there are other alternatives. If we were to just do an across the board cut, we would lose the ability to administer those programs. So it would be sort of counterintuitive to a lot of what's being asked by the defund police movement. And there also is part of the reason why our budget calls for an audit of the police department, is so that we can look more deeply into the department budget, see where funds are being allocated line by line, and make sure that we fully understand where there is more opportunity to make additional cuts to the department or reallocations to the department in the future. And we just need time to do that. And we were required to pass a budget by the end of June, and there wasn't going to be time to be able to do that external audit under this existing state law.
As you said, you're going to need time to do just a multitude of different aspects that the defund the police movement is requesting. Can you sort of give me, even just as you see it right now, what that timeline looks like to you?
Sure. Well, I think the commission that we're wanting to impanel that right away, and we're going to need to move quickly, because we've already given the council's already given the clear direction that we want an update on the budget within 6 months. Once the panel convenes, there may be things that can be done immediately by an executive order or by an internal policy change that could come in a couple of months. Once the council is briefed on changes after the 6 month review, you could see more changes around that time or shortly thereafter. There also, even though this is not a budgetary issue, the council has directed the city attorney's office to look at the ordinance for the police civilian review board and see what additional civilian oversight can be given to that board, and then has asked the city attorney's office to draft an ordinance basically saying rejecting any future applications of the police department for decommissioned military equipment. So those are changes that you'll see in the next couple months, in addition to the recommendations that the commission might be coming up with.
What, not only through a policy standpoint, but maybe even just like public engagement standpoint, what do we need to see as we shift into this reform that people are demanding?
The engagement from the public is, I think we need the public to continue to share their ideas and concerns and frustrations and hopes for what kind of a department they want to see, and what is the kind of department that reflects or that addresses Salt Lake City's needs and our values. And that is going to take time. And so I hope that this groundswell of energy and engagement from the public will be lasting, and that they will continue to dialogue with us as council members and with the mayor's office on what changes we can see. And I know that a lot of people are dissatisfied with the budget last night, or people are upset, and I fully understand that. And to those people, I would say that we hear you, and we are continuing to work to address this. We know that we weren't able to deliver everything that everybody wanted, but we did deliver on, I would say, the majority of issues that were asked of us. And as I said, this is just the beginning. So we hope that they'll continue to dialogue with us in good faith until we can enact even more lasting and long-term change.
Well, it sounds like maybe there could be future changes coming for how the city is policed, from what I'm hearing from Council Chair Chris Wharton there, Tim. But the activists, the residents, I should say, who called in during the council meeting we heard from, they say that the time to make changes is now.
Yeah, again, a coalition of activists wanted to see a $30 million cut to the department's budget. The city and police say that would mean laying off as many as 200 employees from the SLCPD. The $2.8 million they've sort of frozen in the police budget wasn't something these activists were happy about. Again, the council says it will ask for an outside entity to look at the police department's budget and what the impacts of changing the budget in the future would be. That's a review slated to happen next month. And we'll see where that goes and what kind of pressure activists will exert as time rolls on. But Roger, a question I have is how the police themselves are, viewing this whole conversation?
Well, yesterday I sat down with Salt Lake City Police Chief Mike Brown to find out, Tim, and we talked about reform versus defund and about the way that he's thinking about this moment in history. Give a listen. Chief Mike Brown, thank you very much for being here.
Roger, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
Policing is in the spotlight right now, and it's not for a good reason. Around the country, people have been protesting. At this point, I don't think the protests are just about policing tactics. I think that they're more generally about racial inequity in America. But they were sparked by the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis in police custody. Now there are calls to defund the police, and those calls are growing. On Tuesday, in approving a budget, the Salt Lake City Council did some, you could call it trimming of police funding, which we can get to in just a minute. But first, I'm hoping that I can just get your broad response, Chief Brown, on the idea of reallocating money away from the police to other services.
You know, Roger, I have made it a point over the last few weeks to listen and to learn. So that in the future that we can act to effectuate change. But it all comes down to listening. I listened last night when I heard the public speak on the council meeting. I understand the expectations of the council. I'm very glad that we received the money that was earmarked for the things that the council feels like are very important. Body-worn cameras. We received additional money so that we could have cameras for every officer. Why that's important? Is because it builds transparency. Transparency builds trust. Trust builds relationships, all of which we need to have an inclusive community. We can do our job so much better when we have that relationship and that trust with the community because they are our best partner in everything we do.
Part of what that funding included was sort of automatic starting as soon as officers leave their vehicles. Is that right?
Yeah. Let's go over. Look, Salt Lake City is we were kind of one of the pioneer agencies here in the state that went out and we purchased body cameras because I honestly feel it's the right side of history. It really is. But we're now 4 or 5 years into this program and some of our cameras are starting to age out. I mean, the old ones are wired and now the wires are becoming brittle and frayed. And so sometimes the cameras don't work. The batteries don't hold a charge for the whole shift. And so we need to get rid of those old cameras and move on to the new generation cameras. And they are the ones that are wireless, but they come with some other features. And I've actually been out with the officers, and this is tough. When you go out on a call and when things are stressful and your adrenaline's going, you have to remember to hit that button twice to turn it on. I mean, it's harder than people think. What we have now is we've taken away some of those things that they have to think about. So if they turn on the lights on their car, the camera comes on. So it automatically activates that. If they draw their taser, the camera comes on automatically. There's a component now that if they draw their service weapon, the camera comes on. And then if the camera comes on and there are other officers, and I believe it's about 30 feet in the same vicinity or radius, it'll turn those cameras on too, which is a great feature. Again, that will help show transparency. That'll show what we're doing. That's where this technology is going, and that is what we're going to be able to purchase.
As you said, you're grateful that there are those components that the council approved in the funding. There are, you know, many of those, as you pointed out, who commented during Tuesday's committee meeting, city council meeting, that is, they and in previous council meetings, they talked about a disproportionate use of police force against people of color. They talked about continuing to push for defunding the police to a greater degree. And they said that fewer police on the streets is exactly what they want because they feel like that makes them safer. What do you say to that, Chief Brown?
Well, I know that there was conversation that they wanted to defund the police to a number I heard was $30 million. Well, and we've walked through this, we put pen to paper on this, but we have about 569 officers. About 69 or 70 of those work at the airport. So their work is paid back by the airport. So they wouldn't be affected. But if $30 million is about 273 police officers, if you take that off of the 500 that we have, that barely gives us enough officers to fill. In fact, it doesn't actually fill all the beats within the city, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. So now we start picking and choosing which neighborhoods get a police officer and which ones don't. And really all they're ever gonna do is go call to call to call. And so it's going to extend the wait times for officers when you call. If you call 911, it's going to take us longer to respond. It's not going to give us the service that we want to provide to the community. It's not community policing at all. And then that does away with any of the investigation squads. I mean, so homicides, robberies, special victims, crimes of property crimes. We don't have anybody to actually investigate those crimes. So in all honesty, I think that that is not how we want to police our community. And as many people say, look, defund, there's the other side of that coin where we've received hundreds of letters and people reaching out saying, hey, thank you for the great work you do. So I think what this money is really going to help us is going to give us that transparency through the cameras. The other part is that they're funding some social workers. I've said, I mean, look, addiction.
You've said this before. Yeah.
Mental health issues, homelessness. Which one of those three are crimes? None. Right. Yet we try to go out and respond with the tools that we have, which are usually arrest. We're never going to arrest our way out of addiction, mental health issues, or those that experience in homelessness. Social workers give us that component that we can actually work with people to find out what the real root problem is, to find out if they need housing, treatment, whatever it might be, because our officers go, you know, sometimes call to call to call, but the social workers can work with individuals to get them to really what they need to do so that we can help fix some of these social economic problems that people are experiencing right now, and not with police efforts.
You know, there is this sort of parity between what you're saying there, Chief Brown, and the people who are asking for, you know, for the defunding, and that responding to crime is basically what you want police to be doing. You want to stay in your lane, and that the police shouldn't be used as the kind of Swiss Army knife for all of society's ills. And that's something that you've told me before.
Hey, that's my line, Roger.
I know, I'm stealing it. So there are these other communities, like in Eugene, Oregon, for example, they have these community-based crisis responders, and these are non-police first responders who go to respond to community disturbances where crimes aren't being committed. Is that something that you'd like to see done in Salt Lake City, where there's something other than a police force responding to, say, mental health crises, again, homelessness, addiction, where another entity can come and intervene there?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think we should look at any model out there that allows that. Sadly, a lot of the calls that we deal with, if somebody's experiencing a mental health crisis and they call us, sometimes it's not a safe situation until we can come and, you know, make sure things are safe. And then we can bring in the social workers. I mean, a lot of times we go to medical calls where people need medical assistance. Our fire department, those that are there to render the health and safety measures, won't come in until the situation's calm. So I think we're talking a little bit two different situations. One, sometimes it's a crisis situation where we need to respond. I would never want to send somebody in there that couldn't. I don't want anybody to be harmed. So I want to make sure that we can respond safely. But I honestly think a lot of the issues and problems, if they can be done safely, like you're talking about this model, might be a better model. We should look at it.
Hey, on the funding topic, you know, you talked about the staffing cuts that might or that would have to occur if $30 million was taken out of the budget. But just leaving aside staffing cuts, a lot of the focus around the country has been on, in these protests, has been on the militarization of police. Are there any high price tag toys that you could do without, Chief Brown? You know, do we need all the riot gear, for example?
It's called, we call it PPE, personal protection equipment. And let me tell you what that provides us, okay? In a situation when there's civil unrest, when people are assaulting us, when they're throwing bottles, bricks, gallons of milk, street signs, I mean, baseball bats. I mean, we saw everything thrown at our officers a few weeks ago. And what that equipment allows us to do is if somebody threw a brick at your head, that'd be an aggravated assault. You would almost be able to, that's a deadly force situation. And you would probably be justified to respond that way. But having that gear brings it down to a situation that we can manage without making it into a deadly force situation. So that is very important to us. Now, I know some people say, hey, if you bring out the riot gear, you're going to get the riot. But that is not the way we do things here in Salt Lake City. We try to work with the community. We encourage people to protest peacefully. I mean, we want people to come to Salt Lake City and to exercise their First Amendment right. We want them to have their voices heard. We've done that for years. Every 6 months, there are many people that come to protest the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints Conference. We've had protests, I mean, you name it. And we're very good at making sure that we ensure that everybody's rights are respected. But when it comes to a situation where they're assaulting police officers or they're assaulting other people, we still have to provide public safety for everybody. And that PPE allows us to protect our officers and is critical to what we do.
Hey, we're running low on time here, and I just want to ask a couple more questions. One is, on previous shows, you and I have talked about the de-escalation training that Salt Lake City Police engages in. Can you tell us the sorts of steps that are being taken or maybe have been taken in the wake of protests and calls for changes? Are there new changes to how policing is done here in Salt Lake City as a result of the scrutiny and the sort of self-searching that police departments around the nation are doing right now?
Yeah, I mean, we continually train and look for opportunities to understand and better relate with and work with our communities. And that's another thing in the funding that the council earmarked was training money. And I think with Mayor Mendenhall, and as she's putting together a commission that's going to review police policies and police everything that we do, I'm looking forward to actually being able to talk to the commission and having those conversations, because I'd like their input as to what they think the next component of training is going to look like. And so, I mean, I think that's a smart move to start asking the community, what would you like to see us trained in? So I'm excited for that.
Or perhaps in what kind of policies ought to be implemented. I mean, the focus on the death of people like Breonna Taylor in Kentucky, who was killed in a no-knock raid situation. Like, I don't know if that's something that happens here in Salt Lake City. But in terms of police reform policy changes, is that commission going to look at this too?
I think we're going to look at everything we do, and we welcome that, really. There's sometimes we've been doing it for 30 years this way, and here's why. But when you explain that to somebody, they go, have you ever thought about this? Or have you ever thought about why that is being perceived like that? I mean, it's good to have that open, frank discussion, to be transparent, and then accept whatever feedback comes in, because that is where we're going to make true reform. That's where we're going to come together as a police department and a community to make everybody safer in Salt Lake City.
Chief Mike Brown with the Salt Lake City Police Department, thanks very much for making time for this today.
Thank you, Roger. Take care.
He's obviously defending his department's budget as necessary, but maybe also saying that, look, we're sort of a blunt tool, right? And maybe we shouldn't be, again, the Swiss Army knife for all of society's ills.
Sure. And, you know, on the funding part, you could expect the administrator of any single public entity to argue to protect funding. In some ways, I think that they might see that as their job. There are others, though, who want to see more money sent to the police, but to just see a greater percentage of that money used for things like de-escalation training, implicit bias training, anti-racism training, and so on. A couple of weeks back, actually, I spoke with Black Lives Matter Utah founder Lex Scott, And she wasn't, at least in that conversation, advocating for, you know, defunding the police. But she does want to get a toothier police reform bill passed.
Yeah, yeah. And then meanwhile, a number of residents speaking to the city council are saying, we want revolutionary, structural, institutional change. And now's the moment to do it. Do not squander this opportunity.
And Tim, I think that that's where we ask for our listeners' opinions. So what do you want to see done? Do you see the police as an institution upholding systemic injustice? How do you balance that against your ideas of public safety and the service that the police provide? Weigh in on our In the Hive show post at KCPW's Facebook page.
You've been listening to In the Hive here on KCPW, a listener-supported independent public radio station. You can find podcasts of all of our programs at kcpw.org. I'm Tim Pierce.
And I'm Roger McDonough.
Join us again next week, and thank you for listening.